Thanks to the people who are truly rock stars in helping us produce this show, Senior Producer Gary Niederhoff, Operations Manager Barbara Vance, and intern Sarah McQuaid.
Thanks also to financial support from Rena Shulsky David and Sammy David, and to the William K. Bose Jr. Foundation. Big Picture Science is produced at the SETI Institute, a nonprofit scientific and education organization whose scientists study the origin and nature of life, including scanning the skies with its Allen Telescope Array. And a big thanks also to our listeners.
Your ears have been attuned to the Big Picture Science episode, Geology is Destiny. If you'd like to hear more Big Picture Science episodes, well, you'll find them in our archive at bigpicturescience.org.
And if you're a podcast listener but prefer listening to over-the-air broadcasts because you're just sentimental about old-timey radio, check out the listing on our website of radio stations that carry the program. And if your local station is not on that list, consider letting them know you like the show.
Oh, I see. You said sentimental.
That's what I said.
And if you listen to our show via iTunes and especially like our puns, we invite you to leave a review of both on our iTunes page. And to reach us directly with your comments, throw in some faint praise, and then email it all to bigpicturescience@seti.org.
Hey, are you going to the Million Pigeon March in Trafalgar Square?
Nah, I'm gonna join my local chapter in Central Park.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn. Listener-supported, non-commercial radio, featuring local and independent artists.
The film has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. Hi, I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.fm is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we'll be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. And our guest today is Cheryl Costa. Cheryl is a native and resident of upstate New York, who has been interested in UFOs since the age of 12 when she had her first UFO sighting, and she is a military veteran and a retired information security professional from the aerospace industry. She's been a speaker at the International UFO Congress and the MUFON Symposium. Cheryl writes the UFO column New York Skies for SyracuseNewTimes.com. For the past 4 years, she has written articles about historical UFO sightings in New York, UFO statistics, disclosure, and other ufological topics. Besides being a journalist, she's also a published playwright. She holds a Bachelor of Arts degree from the State University of New York at Empire State College in entertainment writing. So I'm happy to welcome Cheryl Costa to the show. Hello, Cheryl.
Hello. How are you tonight?
I'm terrific. And yourself?
I'm Just great. Well, actually, I'm getting over some kind of a little flu bug here, but for the most part, I'm feeling better than I have been.
I tell you, that's going around. I was sick a couple of weeks ago, and what can I say?
Well, I've had my flu shot, so for the most part, I think I'm just weathering a very mild version of it.
All right. It's a changing weather, don't you think?
Yeah, I think the long long Indian summer we've had, too, hasn't helped things at all.
Yeah. Well, it depends on what day it is. I don't know what it's like in New York, but here in Michigan, it's cold one day and warm the next day and cold the next day, and you don't know.
You know what we've had here? It's been like 35, 40 at night and 65 to 75 at daytime, and it's been driving us crazy because you don't know what to wear.
That's right. That's what we're getting here to. So anyway, if you would, tell our listeners about your UFO sighting. This was when you were 12 years old?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It was a couple of weeks before school started. It was late August. School starts up right after, here in New York, starts up after Labor Day.
Mm-hmm.
And we had visited an aunt and uncle, and they're my nephew and they're my cousins up in a place called Savona, New York. It's if you're looking at a New York State map, it's near Bath, New York, and pretty rural in those days. And we were coming down off of a hill. My father took the back road and was going to head back down to the main highway. And it was 4 o'clock in the afternoon. It was a clear blue sky. Now, looking to the west, and my mother had my father pull the car over, and parked out there in the western sky was a big silvery ball. And it'd give you a perspective of how big the thing was. If you put your arm out and look at your little fingernail, that's about how big it was in the sky to us.
Mm-hmm.
And we sat there off the road, and my mother explained it might be something the Air Force is doing, NASA had been around a couple of years, you know. It might be something they were doing, you know. It might be people from another world. And she explained that to me.
Hmm.
And after we sat there and watched it for 15, 20 minutes, it wasn't going anywhere. My father started the car up, and we started to go. And we turned onto the main road, and I kind of crawled up in the back window of that big Chevy Impala we had.
Hmm.
And I was watching it, and when it decided to go, it was like one of these bang, phew, gone, you know, kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
And just seeing that, that changed me. Now, did it make me a super big UFO enthusiast? No. But what happened is my mother and I both started getting books from the library and sharing what we were reading and that kind of thing. Yeah. It kind of brought us together.
So that's odd back then for a parent to say, and it might be someone from another planet, you know. Just, you know what I'm saying?
Well, this is 1965. Remember, things have been in 52 when I was born. I mean, there's a Life. We've got a copy of a Life magazine. It's got Marilyn Monroe on the front page, and up in the upper right-hand corner of the front page of Life magazine, it says making a case for flying saucers.
Yes,
you know,
I
mean, the topic matter was being discussed very thoroughly right up until the Condon report in 68, and then all of a sudden everything got real quiet.
Okay, was it the Condon report or the Brookings Institute that said, no, I don't think it's a good idea to tell the people?
Yeah. Well, the Condon report also basically said there was nothing
right.
to be gained by studying them,
right.
And that was their attitude. And of course, what was going on at that time is the public version of the Air Force, like Project Blue Book, was closed up, and the very dark black project of what they do continued on. They just closed down any kind of civilian dialogue about the topic matter.
Right. But up until that time, they were pretty open about it, weren't they?
Yes, they were. In fact, that article I was telling you about in Life magazine quite literally starts out, top men in the Defense Department don't say a lot about flying saucers and strange things in the sky, but in close quarters, they are very concerned about the things they see that outperform our craft. That was kind of the verbiage.
Right. That was, now I'm not going to tell you his name. But I know what you're talking about. behind closed doors, they are quite concerned. You know? Is what the gist of it, right?
Yep, pretty much.
Yeah. So that was your first experience. So it just hovered there. How long did you watch it hover before it took off?
We watched it off the side of the road for 15, maybe 20 minutes.
Really?
And then when we got back down on the main road, I watched it for probably another 5 or 10.
And then it zipped off, huh?
It just left at great speed.
Yeah.
And my second sighting was about 6 years later. I was in the Air Force. I was in Cameron Bay, Vietnam. Mm. It was Christmas Eve. A friend of mine and I were walking down to the base chapel to go to midnight mass. And we saw something streaking across the sky. It was where we were stationed was out on a coastal area. So you had a really great view of a good clear sky. And a gazillion stars in the sky, as they say. Mm-hmm. And we saw this thing streak, and we thought, well, it's a jet, you know. And then it stopped. Mm-hmm. And we sat there and looked at it, and then the thing started darting around like a fairy and then poof, gone, you know. Jeez. And like I said, you know, I told other people, I said, the two of us certainly didn't have our minds on midnight mass when we got there, that's for sure.
All right. Where were you stationed at the time?
Cameron Bay, Vietnam.
Ah, ha, ha, ha. And the year was 60...
No. It was Christmas Eve, 1971.
Oh, 71, just pretty much before the war ended, yeah. Mm-hmm. So were you thinking, I wonder if the Vietnamese, North Vietnam has something?
No, I didn't think anything along that line. It was pretty much, and also, please understand, by 1971, I've already read books like The Ancient Astronaut stuff.
Right,
Chariots of the Gods, that kind of thing.
Right.
So I pretty much accepted these things weren't from around here.
Right, or not from the neighborhood, huh?
Right, but there was that issue, and I didn't get a lot of exposure to it doing what I did. I was in telephone communication, so I really wasn't like I was involved with radar or anything like this, but I had heard radar guys talk about the fact about enemy helicopters, and I said, wait a minute, how could North Vietnamese don't have helicopters, and the Viet Cong certainly don't have them, mm-hmm. and they just said, trust us, there's enemy helicopters, and only sometime after the war did I come to understand the term enemy helicopters were UFOs.
All right, right, right. And yet, still today, there are those who say, they don't exist, they can't exist, we're alone.
Well, you know what happened? We decided, I was down at the International UFO Congress,
mm-hmm.
and I went in 2014, I went again in 2015, I did a presentation down there about 200 years of UFOs over New York, and I had a professor from Sonoma University in California come up to me and said, hey, can you give me data? He saw that I had a lot of good data in New York. He said, do you have it down to the county level? And I said, ooh, that's hard, but maybe. And we talked about why, and I said, okay, let me see what I can do. Now, it took me about 4 or 5 months to do New York State.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're talking about 4,500 records at that time. And what happened was, I started sharing it with New York State investigators, my charts and graphs of what counties had all the sightings and everything. And suddenly we were seeing patterns that nobody had ever imagined. Like, give an example, out towards Lake Erie, the Niagara frontier, everybody knew about what they called the Lake Erie effect.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, lots of UFO sightings out there on Lake Erie and around the Niagara Falls and all that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But when I put county data to the sighting lists, nobody was doing this. Suddenly, we found out we had a huge amount of sightings up in Monroe County, which is essentially Rochester, which is essentially Lake Ontario. And a couple of New York State investigators, and we're talking some former assistant directors for New York State from MUFON, going, scratching their heads, saying, wow, maybe we've got a Lake Ontario effect going here, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so that got my spouse Linda and I talking, and we got thinking, gee, if we found all this cool stuff here for New York State, what would we find if we did this for the entire country?
Mm-hmm.
And we looked at each other over a burger and a beer one night and said, wow, it's going to take us a year to do it. It took us 16 months, as it turned out.
Wow.
And we did the statistics for the entire country right down to the county level. Over 3,000 counties.
Okay, let's talk for a while about Wayne County, Michigan.
Okay.
You have that statistic there?
Yeah, I do. first thing, let me give you stats for Michigan itself.
Okay.
Okay. Michigan is in the top 10 states for UFO sightings. In fact, they rank number 9 out of 51. And when we say 51, we're saying 50 states plus D.C.
Okay. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So they rank, Michigan ranks number 9 from 2001 to 2015. Remember, we did 21st century numbers only.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. 4,160 sightings.
Okay.
Okay. Top counties are Wayne, Oakland, Macomb, Kent, Genesee, Ingram, Washington, unknown county. This is because people didn't put a city in, Ottawa and Michigan. Or, I'm sorry, Livingston County.
Okay.
Wayne County had 501 in that 15-year period.
Okay. Hmm.
The average in the last 5 years of from like 2010 to 2015 was typically in the low 400s, but 2012 there were 650 reported sightings. But some of that is a factor because a lot of people were interested, were out there looking at the sky during 2012, you know, the Mayan prophecy and all that kind of stuff. And that kind of all that visibility in what I'm going to call social media had a lot of people outside looking.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what we call an artifact of reporting. A lot of people were interested, so a lot more people were reporting things.
That's like now, during an eclipse.
Yeah.
All eyes to the sky, you know.
Exactly. Now, in Michigan, the top five or six types of shapes that they have in Michigan, simply a light in the sky, 542. That's about 11%. A circle in the sky, 537. Triangles, 494. Spheres, 485. And fireballs, 383.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you get a lot. Michigan's got an awful lot of circles, spheres, and triangle sightings.
Triangles have become very popular shape UFO of late. You know.
You know, I had one MUFON investigator refer to them. I says, "Well, what about flying saucers?" And he says, "Well, let's say it this way: flying saucers are your dad's UFO. You know, the triangles are the new model out there.
A new model. That's right. That's right. And the triangles, you know, they like to say, well, you know, the Air Force has triangular shaped craft, okay, and the stealth. And a lot of people think stealth. You say stealth, well, you can't hear them. Yeah, you can. They're very noisy. It's a stealth to radar.
They've got the cross section on radar. What I'm going to call the birds and the bees. It's
right,
really small.
Right. But the triangles that I'm talking about, or that you're talking about, or ufology is talking about, move about 30 miles an hour as they're going overhead. And then zip off. Now,
well, I saw one of them in 2013. Just a couple of months before I started writing my column.
Mm-hmm.
I worked for another newspaper at the time. I came home, in fact, it was June. It was 3 o'clock in the morning. We had just put the morning edition to bed.
Mm-hmm.
And I just parked my car in the garage, and I used to come out of the garage and stand there and look at, like, the northern sky, look at the Big Dipper, all that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that while I had a clear sky, I noticed something that certain stars were missing, and then I noticed they were starting to black out. And this thing was moving about 35, 40 miles an hour, just a nice leisurely pace.
Mm-hmm.
It was about 2 football fields long and about 2 stories thick.
Wow.
And I didn't report it. You know, I was still kind of unfamiliar with, like, reporting these things and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I went in and made notes in my journal and sketched it and everything. And then when I actually started writing the column for the newspaper, I saw that a nurse coming off shift up at one of the local hospitals reported seeing it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of corroborated in that sense.
Right. So, yeah, when the powers that be try to tell you, oh, those triangles, that's just the stealth bombers, and they're test planes, what have you, prototypes. Well, I'll tell you what, they go awfully slow, and any plane that goes that slow is going to just drop out of the sky. Or they'll come to a complete halt and just hover.
Well, we had a sighting like this. Oh God, when was it? I don't remember the date time frame, but I think it was back in the early 2000s, around 2003 or 2004.
Mm-hmm.
It was to the east of Syracuse in a county called Herkimer County, and okay. It's a pretty rural area up there. It's what we call the leather stocking region of New York. It's along the New York State Thruway and what used to be the canal, Erie Canal.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy was on his farm. He's like 16, 17 years old, and he was going across the winter fields. This is like middle of January. And it, you know, 7 o'clock at night, it looks like midnight out, you know. And he's on a snowmobile driving across the corn, a winter cornfield, so to speak, and going to a friend of his farm.
Hmm.
And all of a sudden, he starts hearing this thudding hum, boom, 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 that type of thing. And it's a real big, loud humming sound. And suddenly his snowmobile poops out, quits. And he looks up, and the stars in the sky above him are being blotted out by something triangular. Okay? And it flew over some high tension wires, you know, like the when I'm talking high tension, I'm talking like the main, you know, the big grids, that
right,
type of thing.
Right, right.
And it flew over this grid, and it was like lightning bolts jumping up off the grid to this thing.
Okay.
And that's how he described it. And he said shortly after it passed all of that, he was able to start his snowmobile. But it when this thing was over top of him, it just killed it.
Yeah, I don't know how how the government or the powers that be, whatever, the hidden government tries to tell us, you know, silly. Their explanations are so silly when it's compared to the evidence, like the speed of these craft and the mm-hmm. shape of these craft. They don't have wings. They're triangular shaped. But at any rate, I need to take just a moment to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, 89.3 FM on your radio, and WHFR.FM on your computer. So you are listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with UFO researcher Cheryl Costa. And we're talking about triangular-shaped UFOs and Wayne County sightings. What about New York? Now, you have a blog. Tell us about your blog. How long have you had that?
It's the column I write for Syracuse New Times.
Okay.
We've been at it since July of 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, when I originally sold it, I'd already been talked out. I'd been thrown out of a bunch of offices by editors all over the region. I kept pitching this thing to newspapers. And, I mean, I literally had editors looking at me and saying, what brand of tinfoil do you wear? You know, that kind of thing. And I went to this one weekly, and I knew the editor, the new editor-in-chief had worked at another newspaper that I had worked at previously.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say worked at a newspaper, I was in the technical production area. I made the plates every night, and I helped control the production of the papers at night. I was a technical person, technical production, but not I was not formally a writer.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to the guy who was the editor, and I told him what I had in mind, and I had like four or five slides I wanted to show him, you know, a piece of paper of my pitch and what I thought the demographics were and everything. And he said, no, I don't want to see them for a minute. So we sat there and talked for had tea for 45 minutes to an hour. And this guy, apparently, he was about as old as I am, so he had a sense of, and he was familiar with a number of the authors who of books I had read in high school and college, you know, guys like Frank Edwards and people like that, and Stan Friedman, all those guys.
Right.
So it was, he obviously was sympathetic to the topic matter, and he knew his stuff. He really did. And so he said, tell you what, we'll try this. We'll try this for a month and see what happens, you know, and if it doesn't work out, I'll take you out of the paper in about a month.
Mm-hmm. I said,
okay, that's fair, you know. So we tried it, and he calls me up about a month later. He said, why don't you come over? I figured, well, that's it. This is over with. And I get in there to talk to him. I said, so are you taking me out? He says, no, anything but. And I said, well, what do you mean? He says, well, you're drawing more page views than all of the columnists combined.
Really?
Yeah, so, and in those days, I had a relatively small audience. These days, my audience is huge. So, it's done well for the paper. In fact, 2 weeks ago, they did a cover story on me.
Mm-hmm.
I was on the front page of the paper, being where one of those papers you get in the supermarket, they hand out, you know, it's a freebie. They put the whole front page had my picture on it, and they had an article and page pictures and everything of me doing some work here, and it was three page article. I was impressed. And that's pretty much the deal, and it was a lot of fun. We were very surprised this past spring when our book UFO Sightings Desk Reference came out. Linda and I built this book. Took, like I said, 16 months to make it.
Mm-hmm.
And when we put it out, the New York Times broke their 70-year silence of saying bad things about UFOs and said something nice about us.
Really?
In fact, they put us in their science magazine on 24th of... In fact, your audience, if they want to Google it, New York Times UFO 24 April 2017, you're going to get this article titled UFOs Are Being Seen Everywhere and This Book Proves It. You know, and,
yeah.
And we asked them, why did you guys do such thorough research on us? In fact, the guy who wrote the story was a Pulitzer Prize winner. And he said, you guys are the first ones to come along and really put numbers on the table. You've got a 2.5-pound book full of numbers.
Wow.
How can you argue with that?
You know, yeah, well, statistics. You know, people are tired of hearing anecdotes.
I'll tell you something, Dave.
Yeah.
I've gotten more hate mail from people saying, oh, this book just is as dry as a bank ledger. It's got no stories and anecdotes, you know. And we stay up front. That was never our intention. Our intention was to organize the data in such a way that if someone wanted to do research work,
yeah.
In fact, we were encouraging libraries to put this in their reference section, and a lot of libraries have.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the difference. I mean, you know, there are plenty of books out there on with. You know, George Filer and I wrote, it's really George Filer's book, Filer's Files. You familiar with Filer's Files?
Yeah. Okay. He's a good guy. He's a great guy.
Oh, yeah, he is. And I co-authored the book with him. And it's just anecdote after anecdote, you know, grassroots reports of UFO sightings worldwide. And that's all well and good, but where are the statistics? Where are the facts? Where are the numbers? Well, obviously you've got them.
Well, you know what surprised us was the fact that nobody else had ever done this.
Mm-hmm.
My spouse Linda, who's the co-author, she used to work for the National Academy of Science,
mm-hmm.
and she was the head librarian, research librarian, for the Environmental Protection Agency's Economic Poisons Library. EPA had 9 libraries,
mm-hmm.
and they each of them sort of specialized in a particular area of environmental protection. And she was in the DC library, and she was their head librarian director kind of thing. And she knew how to make this book look like a government report.
Hmm.
And so we laid it out that way. No cute aliens on the front. In fact, what we did do is we took and put a we did put a UFO on the front. Okay, we had it hand drawn by a local artist friend of ours, and we did it very symptomatic of something you might have seen if somebody reported a UFO back in the 60s.
Right.
You know, kind of like a Betty and Barney Hill kind of UFO with lots of windows across the middle of it or something.
Right.
And that's what we did. And that's the only picture we didn't. We were afraid of publishers wanting to put cute little aliens on the front and all that kind of thing. We said, no, we're going to keep this thing straight up. This is scientific data. We're going to make this thing look like the Census Department put it out.
Yeah, that is the best way, the best way. Give that title again where people can go to check that out.
They can go to Amazon.com, and they can have it in like 2 days, two mm-hmm. to 3 days. It's called UFO Sightings Desk Reference. United States of America, 2001-2015, and by Cheryl Costa and Linda Miller Costa.
Very good.
And the focus of the thing, there's no sightings in the thing. It's about frequency, distribution, and shapes. There's mm-hmm. about four, maybe five chapters worth of narrative where we do some analysis and explain some things. In fact, instead of doing a introductory chapter, we did an FAQ. We kind of bowed to, like, modern way of doing these things. And we basically took all the questions that had been thrown at us during the year we were writing it and wrote it up in an FAQ.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Okay, so let's get back to the statistics in New York and in your, not necessarily in your county, but more, you know, the counties of New York. Because it's a hotbed, in my estimation, the Hudson Valley sightings and that type of thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, what's interesting about New York State is it's number six in the country for sightings.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's in the top 10. And we had 5,141 sightings in that 15-year period. We ranked number six of 51.
Mm-hmm.
The thing we didn't realize, and in fact, this is not in the book, but the thing we didn't realize until we actually used the book ourselves for research, I took I started looking for clusters. Now, two types of clusters we found. You can go to a county that's near a major city, and yeah, there's tons of UFO sightings there listed in that county, and it makes it look like it's a hotbed. And it's just because there's a big population there.
Mm-hmm.
What gets your attention, though, is because we put county data to a lot of little towns that were not much more than a cattle crossing, you know, and a volunteer fire department and a general store was about all they had there, out in the middle of agriculture country. And suddenly, when you get up into those counties and you start seeing clusters of UFOs in certain counties, you start saying, whoa, what's going on up here in these rural counties? You know, because it'd only be onesie twosies reportings from all these little villages.
Mm-hmm.
And we sat down with some people who do cattle mutilation evaluations, and they went bananas with this data. Because, I'll give you an example, we did one a couple months ago where we actually helped an agriculture magazine out in Kansas that was reporting 40 years worth of cattle mutilations in Kansas. And we laid a map out for them with all the sighting numbers or Kansas by county, and then we took a yellow felt tip and went back into their big feature news article, took a yellow felt tip and marked all the counties they called out. They had all the activity, and there they all were, and they had huge numbers, those counties, and they were not particularly large counties for population, okay?
So they seemed to fit in with the with the number of cattle mutilations, the sightings did.
Yes,
right?
Yes, it seemed to follow. It seemed to track that. I mean, granted, if you moved up to Kansas City, which is a huge major city, you know, obviously the numbers went up there. But when you're out in the middle of, literally out in the rural Kansas, and you've got this track right down the middle of the state, and the counties with all the heavy mutilation had all the heavy sightings, and the literature out there, newspaper articles, magazine articles, agriculture trade magazine type articles, always would talk about the mutilations and what was happening and everything. And, of course, there was always the sort of the tail end of the article always had kind of a tongue-in-cheek and, oh, yeah, the locals say they've seen a lot of UFOs too, ha-ha, wink-wink. But when we went back to that trade magazine and threw this map at them and say, yeah, you got a UFO problem there with your mutilations, they sat up and took notice.
Really? What do you think the point is of the cattle mutilations? Or animal, I should say animal mutilations, because...
Well, it's a lot of different things, yeah. It might be protein, it might be, you know, it might be meals. It might be research.
Free hamburgers, is that it?
Pardon me?
Free hamburgers, is that it?
Well, they've had a few where the cattle was literally dropped down on, I have one was dropped down on top of a telephone pole. There's
right.
Another one, the only thing that was dropped was the bone and the skin. I was working with a local investigator, a MUFON investigator, and he showed me the little device he uses to measure the compression of the ground,
mm-hmm.
you know, where, like, maybe if there's been a sighting where there's supposedly a landing, you go out there and you press this thing into the ground, and it'll tell you how much weight may have been there.
Mm-hmm.
And they said most cattle mutilations have a heavy ground compression that suggests that the cow or the other livestock was dropped from a great height.
Right, right.
And there was a significant compression with the impact.
So that would rule out satanic ritual. They like to say, well, it was satanic ritual. They snuck out there and mutilated this poor cow.
Yeah, but these things are largely bloodless.
Yeah.
And there's precision in the work that's been done and all that. So there's a lot to that. We were talking about New York. One of the things I did with New York was some of the folks who follow USOs, the underwater UFOs.
Right.
Asked me about New York State and all that, and I tracked from the St. Lawrence Seaway up in St. Lawrence County all the way across Lake Ontario down to the center of Lake Erie, okay, which is considered the St. Lawrence Seaway area.
Mm-hmm.
And I cranked the numbers for those counties, and it was rather significant. So I got this idea. It was like 19% of the sightings for New York State. And then I went up to Lake Champlain and followed all the way down the Hudson, all the way to the Atlantic. Okay?
Okay.
And I did not count Long Island. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And there was 32% of New York State's sightings. So 51% of New York State's sightings followed the St. Lawrence Seaway and the Hudson Valley.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, Linda Zimmerman concurred with me seriously when I told her those numbers for the Hudson Valley.
Mm-hmm.
But I was doing an interview one night where something I didn't notice while we were putting the book together. I used census maps to kind of like mark, you know, break the states up into organized groups. I used the actual census maps, since most government agencies use census maps too. So I figured, let's use the standard mapping, you know.
Right.
And what caught my eye was all the states, sort of like Michigan, everybody who was literally touching one of the Great Lakes, the sighting numbers were in the thousands,
mm-hmm.
okay? As little as 1,500, but as many as 4,000 or 5,000 per state, okay, mm-hmm. for that 15-year period. Move one to two states away, and the numbers drop into the low hundreds.
Okay, so this idea that UFOs are only sighted over barren land and agriculture and farmland, that's not true. It's mostly over water.
Well, that's where a predominance of the reporting is. Now, remember, this, whether or not they're happening. You know, I had a lot of people come up to me with the book, oh, they've all got to be out in the desert. No.
Yeah.
No, they're all in Roswell. No.
They're all in Roswell.
Well, okay, now when I say the desert and I say no, I shouldn't say that.
Mm-hmm.
Phoenix, Arizona, Maricopa County, which is the county where Phoenix, Arizona, Maricopa County is the number two county in the country for UFO sightings, around 2,563, give or take a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Phoenix, Arizona is the number one city in the country for sightings, and it was over 900 on its own.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah.
And
but that's a huge city.
That's just the city. That's not, and then within the county, the number swells up to about over 2,500.
Right, right. What I'm
saying.
The
largest county in the United States is Los Angeles County.
Oh,
they had 3,215 sightings in that 15-year period. And that's bigger, that the amount of sightings in Los Angeles County is bigger than 40 of the individual states by themselves. The amount of sightings in Maricopa County, Arizona, essentially Phoenix, is bigger than 36 of the individual states by themselves.
Okay, notwithstanding Phoenix, talking about Los Angeles, that's right there on the ocean.
Yeah.
By the ocean.
Yeah.
So.
But the thing I want to make sure I'm clear to your audience about, when I say Los Angeles County, I'm talking the county.
Okay.
That's a lot of square miles.
Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The actual city of Los Angeles actually only ranks about number 25.
Really?
It ranks down around, and it's somewhere in the top 10, but it's not very high.
Oh, really? Okay. So I stand corrected.
The city only has 500 square miles versus the county has, 4,700, 5,000 square miles or something like that. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and when you're doing these statistics, you have to bear in mind that most UFO sightings go unreported. Like 90%.
I can talk to that, too.
Yeah.
A lot of people, if you go to a convention, they'll tell you 1 in 10 people reports that,
mm-hmm.
reports them, okay? And Fox Pictures was releasing a movie back in July. In fact, they sponsored a national poll back in July of this year.
Mm-hmm.
And they were asking people how many people had believed in them, how many people had seen them. And I had been using a poll from National Geographic from 2012, but it asked how many people believed in them, but didn't tell you how many people said they saw them.
Okay.
Okay. And let's look at my numbers for a minute. That my 15-year period, we total up 121,000 reported sightings,
mm-hmm.
over a 15-year period, with an average in the last 5 years or so in the 10,000-12,000 range per year. In the earlier years of 2001 through about 2006, people were just starting to get connectivity in the bigger onto the internet,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Right.
And part of the reporting is driven by, it's an artifact of reporting based on the idea that people didn't have an easy way to report the data.
Okay.
Okay? So if you look at my master charts for the United States, it jumps up, it goes up from the 3,000s per year until about 2006, and then it starts ramping up. And then when it gets up to around 2010, 2011, it ramps up a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the early numbers were an artifact of reporting. So let's say there's an average of about 10,000-12,000 a year that are reported now. Okay.
Okay.
Well, I looked at the Fox thing, and it said 53 million people said they had seen a UFO.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, well, let me crank that number backwards a little bit. I tried it back 50 years. I took it back to 1967 and divided that number up. And that said it was like 1 in 7. It was like 1 in 72 or something like that. I forget what the number was. But it said it might have been about almost 900,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then I said, no, that still doesn't feel good to me. So I took it back to 1957. Okay, and the number came down into the 800,000. And so I took it all the way back to 1947, figuring we've got people around, probably participated with that survey, that are alive and since 47. And so I said, okay, let's take that the what we're going to call the modern era, the last 70 years, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I broke that up along that, and that's when I started seeing a number of around 750,000 a year. And that broke down to something like 1 in 50 people reports what they see, and that number falls in very close to what we're seeing in the book.
Okay, yeah. Okay, I need to take one more moment just to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, Station Making Waves. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with author and UFO researcher Cheryl Costa. And we're talking about the stats around the country. You say 1 in 50 report?
That's what we think it is. The thing is, when people in the UFO community were telling me 1 in 10, and the way they arrived at that is they got guys like Stanton Friedman at a big talk with 3,000, 4,000 people in the audience mm-hmm. and say, hey, how many people have seen a UFO? And almost everybody puts their hand up.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll say, how many people reported it? And only about 10% keep their hand up.
Right.
And that was always kind of used as a rule of thumb.
Mm-hmm.
But I had other people who were researchers saying, no, it's got to be up around 35 to 1, 50 to 1, something like that. And I didn't know what to think until I saw this other poll, and I started crunching the numbers a couple of different ways. And it starts to look like there's a lot more traffic out there than is being reported.
That's what I'm saying, yeah. Yeah, I'm saying that most people don't report their sightings, am I right?
Well, yeah, and it's for a number of reasons. I've talked to people, and of course, there's this whole psyops thing that people were not supposed to report these things. You know, a news crew would come out, put a camera in your face, and then make you look like an idiot on the 6 o'clock news.
That was their modus operandi to make you
denial and ridicule.
Yeah, okay? Denial and ridicule.
And that got passed down. It sort of got institutionalized with people. So I'll give you another example of what happens of this, though. When I started running my column, people started inviting me occasionally to like a family reunion or something like this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd go over there with a security person to make sure it was safe, you know. And then, and when I realized it wasn't a setup or something like this, next thing you know, I got a beer in my hand and a burger, and we want you to meet our Uncle Frank who saw Foo Fighters in the war, or Aunt Sally saw this, and that's kind of what I dealt with. And something I discovered was because people weren't reporting these things and were told to hush up, don't tell anybody, they'll think you're crazy. That was
right.
The whole mentality. They'll think you're crazy, or they'll think you're a kook or a crackpot
right.
or tinfoil hat person, that type of thing. And this is, I've heard all of this from people. On the other hand, they say, oh, in our family, we've had all of these sightings, and people are handing down these sighting stories within families like
mm-hmm.
heirlooms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, the thing is, now I often tell this on my show about my sister. My sister and I had a sighting years ago, and she was afraid to tell anybody about this sighting for fear that of ridicule. I said, if you take 10 people separately, don't tell them all in a group, because they all have to feel like they have to deny it. But you tell them separately, 10 people, and you'll find that 4 out of 5 of them are going to have a story for you.
Uh-huh.
And a little while later, she said, you know what, I took you up on that, and you're right. 4 out of 5 people either have seen a UFO or know someone whose opinion they trust has seen a UFO. So they had a story for her, you know? So, but basically you're afraid to tell anyone for fear of ridicule, but that seems to be going away more and more because more and more people are coming out with their stories. So as they are, more and more people do come out with their story.
I'd like to share a really old one with you.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a couple of elders come to me, okay? I had one lady in her late 70s. I had another lady who's in her late 80s came to me,
mm-hmm.
okay? And we talked, and the one lady, I'm going to give you the one that the eldest one first. This one was passed down in her family. 1880s, about 1882, spring, it was around April, it was in upstate New York, out towards if you look in a New York State map, about central of the state, you'll see this place called Bath, New York, down along the southern tier.
Okay.
And just a little bit to the west of Bath was a place called Cameron, and Cameron Mills. Cameron Mills these days is rural. Then it was wilderness. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And these, you remember the old stories, my grandma used to say, well, I walked 7 miles to school in the morning. You know, it was one of those deals. Okay?
All uphill both ways.
Okay, so these kids were going, all these farm kids were going to a one-room schoolhouse about 7 miles down the road. They had to cross this bridge, this wooden bridge, and the creek was unusually swollen from the winter runoff.
Right.
And they went to go cross it, and they looked down by the water, and there were these little short men in blue, they call them blue coveralls, probably blue jumpsuits, but blue coveralls.
Mm-hmm.
They had big almond eyes, were bald, and they were taking, like, rock samples and water samples and all this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And they saw these guys, and they waved the guys down there by the water, all waved them, invited the kids to come down, and the kids were terrified, and they all ran home to their farms.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the story came to us, two of the little girls that were there, that were about fifth and sixth grade, two of those little girls grew up and became teachers, and that those stories were handed down to this lady, and they were her great aunts.
Hmm. Wow. So do you think they were abducted at that time? Or
No. Well, you know, the thing is that's a possibility, too.
You know,
these abductions follow experiencer events, follow family lines.
Especially with children, and, you know?
Yeah, and they track through families, so it's hard to tell, you know. I asked her that question, and she couldn't tell me whether or not there'd been anything like that with her family.
Yeah. Hmm. Interesting.
And that's an even bigger ridicule factor, and a lot of people are going to keep that real personal and private, even if they do know.
What, the abduction?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I often say that MUFON, when we started checking out the UFOs, stuck with the nuts and bolts UFOs. They didn't want to touch the abduction phenomenon, but they're more into that now. Because what's interesting is
I had somebody come to me, a prominent researcher came to me a couple of months ago and gave me a lead on where I may be able to get data on large amounts of abduction type of accounts, okay, and through a particular deceased person's personal archives, and so I'm in the process of negotiating with family members to see if I can have access to the data, not so much to report what people had reported as much as to find out the scale of the incidents from this person that supposedly has tens of thousands of individual reports, you know.
Is this so, a well-known?
But somebody's got to do the data crunching on it. And this researcher reached out to me and said, "You did such a good job with the sightings. See if you can reach out and get this information." So,
excellent. You got to do that, and then come back on the show and tell us what you found out.
One more thing we're doing with the book. Right. When we were cleaning up the book, people don't. Enter, there was like 3% of the records for the entire United States did not have, what's the word I want to use, did not have city data. They didn't put in city data. They either left it blank or they wrote something in, "I'm afraid to tell you," or "my parents told me not to tell you," or "my husband told me not to tell you," you know, that type of thing. And so we have in every state of the union in our book, we have an unknown county. And it's everybody that had an unspecified city, we just wrote it as unspecified, and we sorted it into an unknown county for that state. But there was about 3.5% for the entire country where people didn't give us the cities. But here's the other thing. People spell the name of the cities wrong. They spell them with all uppercase, all lowercase, mixed case. Sometimes they'll put a little tab. They'll space one in, and you can't sort on something if it's got an extra blank character in there. So we've had to go in and clean this stuff up. One of the things we're hoping to come out with, and we're probably going to come out with it as a Kindle print-on-demand book, and it's going to be a cities directory where you'll literally be able to go to a state, pick out a county, and literally look at that county and see a breakdown for every single county by its municipalities.
I can drill.
This is the most amazing thing. We can literally drill down to the city level now.
That sounds interesting. That sounds like a winner. Yeah.
I've had several reporters work with me, and where we got the idea was they would come to me, but if I had county data, and they'd come to me and say, "Well, Cheryl, could you give us, you know, could you tell us what, you know, how that breaks down in our county?" So I went back into the database and cleaned up the specific cities and the spelling for just that county or something like that, you know. And I started getting more and more requests. So I said, well, all right, I'll do them on a request basis. So slowly we've been getting the database cleaned up, but it is old school Excel editing. We're in there touching every record. And I'm through about 68,000 records now. And I got to get it up to 121,000. So it's going to be probably spring before we get them all done.
Do you think that full disclosure would panic the public?
All right. National Geographic did a poll back in 2012. Said 36% are firm believers. Okay, 42% were on the fence, but you know, if evidence came out, they'd be there with it, okay?
Right.
And that made for about over 70%. And 70 to 80% believe the government's hiding what it knows, okay? 17% think it's baloney. Mm-hmm. It's that 17% of 320 million people that I worry about.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw
it. I had a guy, I published something here locally, and it made it into one of these neighborhood Facebook pages, you know, the type of thing the article did. And there were a couple of people that were just absolutely threatened. They just absolutely went off on me. There's no such thing, and da-da-da-da. You know, it was just absolutely horrid how badly this person was threatened by even the notion of it.
Yeah, I've noticed that certain people are just, you know, if they're skeptical, some will say, no, it just can't be. There's no evidence, you know.
They can't get here from there.
They can't, yeah, like that one.
I had this guy who started pounding on his chest. I am a degreed scientist with degrees from RPI College and chemistry and physics and they can't get there from here. And I said, wait a minute, it used to take us 3 months to get to the new world. Now we do it in about 6 hours, you know, and the space shuttle does it in 20 minutes, or the orbiting craft does it in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
I said, you know, maybe they're a lot more advanced than we are, and they have figured something out, but it's trillions and trillions of miles. And I said, yeah, but they're probably more advanced than we are. Mm-hmm. But this guy just turned into an absolute troll.
Yeah.
I couldn't get rid of him, you know.
Well, some of the people are just so afraid that it is true that, you know, and like this scientist you're talking about, you know, he feels he's the cream of the crop. He knows everything there is to know. And the truth of the matter is he knows everything he knows, and that's all he knows, and nothing more. But that is the problem. Some people are just so petrified that that we're being visited by beings that are more advanced than us. And if they are more advanced than us, which they would have to be, thank God that they're not going to eat us, you know, to serve man.
Yes, right.
You know that old thing?
Well, you know, I had somebody say to me the other day, and I know we've got to be wrapping it up here. They made the comment to, you know, a lot of these guys that are coming or that are visiting us are probably so advanced to the point where if they stop off to see us, it's like us pulling over to pet the dog on the side of the road.
Yeah. Or see the anthill.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And why would they want to step on that anthill, you know? They're more advanced than that, yeah. So,
can I give one more pitch for my book?
Please, I was just about to ask you, where can people go to find out more about
it? It's not in stores as a rule, but you can get it from, we published it through Amazon because they're the biggest publisher in the planet, so we went with them. It's called the UFO Sightings Desk Reference. And the whole name is United States 2001 of America, United States of America 2001 to 2015. If you Google UFO sightings desk reference and throw my name in there, Cheryl Costa, believe me, you'll see it come up. Barnes & Noble and Amazon have been the primary providers for it, and you go to their online sites, you can order it up.
Yeah, and I, you know, since you told me about it, I look forward to the other book you plan on doing, stats on abductees. You plan on doing that?
That's going to take a while. Again, like I said, I'm in the process of trying to arrange an appointment and a meeting with family members of this deceased researcher.
Okay.
And see if they'd be willing to share the data with me.
You're not telling me the name of this researcher, so I feel that you don't want me to know. Is that it?
At this stage of the game, it's inappropriate.
I see. Okay.
I don't want to poison the water.
Okay. Well, good enough. Good enough. And as to your blog, where can we go for that?
Okay, SyracuseNewTimes.com. SyracuseNewTimes.com, all one word. If you when you get to the Syracuse New Times, if you hover over the navigation bar, you'll see blogs, and a little drop down will come down. You'll see one for New York Skies. It's also labeled the UFO column or blog. You click on it, and whatever my current article is, you'll see it. In fact, I think these days, if you click on it, you get my entire archive of the last 4 years of my articles.
Very good. Chokas, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, David.
And hope to have you back again.
Anytime.
Okay. And if our listeners have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. That's dtwitchell@hotmail.com. And this show, as well as all the forum shows, is now archived at WHFR.FM's website. Click on Talk Shows on the homepage, then Tuesday Forum. We Are Not Alone is also archived at my website, which is UFOImplications.com. That's UFOImplications.com. So please stay tuned to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, for the best in alternative programming. And I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us again the first Tuesday of each month at 1 p.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. And until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.
Listener-supported, non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn. Featuring local and independent artists.
Yo, guys and dolls. You were at the malt shop with Daddy G on WHFR. So, we're going back to the 50s and the 60s today. Once again, as always. And let's hang those fuzzy dice in the rearview mirror. Grab your favorite squeeze and head on down to the malt shop where the jukebox is playing